sick of listening to your shit. Shut the fuck up.
If you're a heckler, shut up. If you're a hater, shut up. If you ain't holding the mic, then shut the fuck up. Fuck boy, shut up. Fake friends, shut up. If you ain't about growth, then shut the fuck up. Negrophobia, shut up. All lives matter, shut up. White man with a forked tongue, shut the fuck up. Victim blamer, shut up. Uncaring, shut up. If you're worthy to our benefit, shut the fuck up. Liar, liar, shut up. Wolf crier, shut up. When grown folks are talking young and shut the fuck up. You a traitor, shut up. Manipulator, shut up. Real friends, though the time to shut the fuck up. Wrong preacher, shut up. Wicked preacher, shut up. If you ain't got any answers, hey, shut the fuck up. Interrupter, shut up. Obstructor, shut up. If you ain't holding the peace pipe, shut the fuck up. Hey, hey, hey. 2021.
Hey, shut the fuck up.
That's what's up.
Shut up!
Shut up!
You cannot talk!
Épisode 141. Born with less. Why shed tears? Save your sympathy. My childhood years were spent burying my peers in the cemetery. Here's a message to the newborns waiting to breathe. If you believe, then you can achieve. Just look at me. Against all odds, for life is hard, we carry on. Living in the projects, broke with no lights on. To all the seeds that follow me, protect your essence. Born with less.
Message!
But you still precious. Just smile for me now. Hey, welcome, bienvenue à un autre épisode of Shut Up Podcast. I am your host, B Black, a.k.a. Mr. ShutUpPodcast.com and a.k.a. Le Grand Papa B. Ding, 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 ding. Before I start the show, I want to inform you new listeners that this podcast is protected by the red, the black, and the green, and waves a red, black, and a red, blue flag. Rouge et bleu is up in this bitch. If you didn't know, now you know. I represent and hold it down for black folks who stand out and grew up watching TV Ontario, Télé-Québec, and Soul in the City on Much Music. I don't know if it matters, but grew up in the 80s watching TV Ontario, Télé-Québec, and Soul in the City on Much Music. It doesn't matter. The point is TV Ontario, Télé-Québec, and Soul in the City. That's the part you need to remember. I represent and hold it down for black folks who, okay, I said that already. Today's date is January 21, 2024. And then if you're, for any people in the future, listening to this shit in the past, it's fucking cold out there. What is it? Minus 15 right now? Yeah. And feels like minus fuck. Anyway, yeah. Today's date is January 24, 2024. Recording on the Sabbath. And this episode is being recorded on unceded Anishinaabe Algonquin territory. This episode is also brought to you by the letter F. F for Fuck Whitey. Fuck Whitey as a staff, record labeled as a motherfucking crew. And if you want to be down with Whitey, then fuck you too. I'm looking at my board, and I think the white man has made it so that every time I say fuck Whitey, it peaks. So let me do a bit of adjustment. Let's see if that helps. I don't know. My point is, I hope I didn't burst your eardrums. In French, we call them tampons. Yeah, not tampons. Tampon. Anyway, it doesn't matter. All right. Hey, right. Okay, so just for you new listeners, just to help you get a little situated on this podcast, again, welcome. And, to you returning listeners, welcome back. Now, so all my podcasts, I like to break down my episodes into three parts, three acts, if you will, like you were in a show, and there's act one, act two, you know, and then there's intermission in between, even though my intermissions are really short. The first act is the introduction, and this is where I play is the introduction, second act is using random thoughts, and the last act is final thoughts. Why do I call him X? It was workshopped. I might change it because why? Because it's my goddamn podcast. All right. So in the introduction, as I already know, I play the theme song, then tell you the title of the episode, then welcome you and try to you know, when you about to watch a movie and they say viewer discretion advised, I'm not sure what that part is called, but so after I give you the title and recite some poetry, that's what I do. This episode will have a lot of nudity, you know? Oh, okay, right. If you're Gen X, you can relate. Maybe in some of you, Gen Z? Millennials, excuse me, millennials. If you're Gen X and millennials can relate to watching a movie and the introduction would say, yeah, the material, the show you're about to watch contains nudity, and that shit would make your day. Yeah, because some of you kids can't remember a time before the internet. Trust me, man. Boobs. We love boobs. Any potential for boobs in a movie was like music to our ears. Oh, yeah, music to our ears. Granted that you were alone, it would suck if your parents were in the same room. It's like, you could tell, hey, mom, dad, could you beat it? Because I'm about to beat it. Okay, that's a dumb joke. All right, okay. What was I? Yes, in the introduction, I like to warn you about the podcast you're about to listen to, give you the date, and then do shit like share some quotes. And today's quotes are, the first one is by Frederick Douglass, because it's been weighing on my mind, and it kind of influenced today's final thoughts. And it goes, it's easier to build strong children than to repair broken men. Frederick Douglass. But sometimes I think he means that, you know, beat your kids. I don't know if that's his way of saying beat your kids, or don't raise your kids to be bitch ass. Anyways, yeah. Second quote. It goes, author unknown, and it goes, it's not that I can't see what they can see. It's that I see what they can't. That's an amazing quote. Shout out to Talon Macy for sharing it with me. I'm grateful also for the fact that, because I made a joke about how when I read this quote, it made me think of growing up in the church settings. And especially in the Bible, there's something about there's a verse in the Bible about how, I'm paraphrasing, but pretty much you're too stupid to discern what you see, so you got to let the Lord figure that out. And shit like that is useful for, you know, like when you're about to face fears or you're about to go against all odds. Sometimes it's good to trust in a higher power. But where that line gets abusive is when your pastor is a narcissist, and he wants you to believe that he's the closest thing to God. So if you see that you have a lot of money in your bank account, then you know it's up to him to say like, hey, yeah, that money should go in my pocket. That didn't make sense, did you? Right. But my point is, in the tweet reply that I put in, it made Talon Macy laugh and. You know, that made my day. The idea that I made Brother Talam laugh. Because I'm grateful for all the arts, for his poetry. It's a fair exchange. All right, okay. What? It's your X anniversary? Sorry, gang. I made the mistake of clicking on notification. All right, okay. All right, so that's it for the introduction. Let's jump to using random thoughts and then take it from there. All right, okay, let's go. Yeah, you know, I record on Sundays and I have this bad habit of not recording to a. No, I record late. I record late, and maybe I do that so I don't think about the fact that I got to be at work the next day. Whatever. So I'm just a little mad at myself for recording late. How does that change your life? It doesn't. You didn't really need to know that. Okay. All right. Before I start, use a random thought. Okay, first item. First one on the list is, so this week I discovered that in Canada, we have for our we have a phone number, a simple phone number, which is 988 to get to an it's emergency number for suicide prevention. It's a suicide crisis helpline. And we have a number for it called 988. I had no idea about that. But you know where I learned about it? Well, first I'm sharing the information because I didn't know. And the people I was with when we heard about it, it was new information. So I'm imagining this is something new for you as well. If you did know, then each one teach one. All right. Second, how I found out about it is at work, we had this presentation about mental health. I forget the title, but, you know, mental health. Apparently, well, not apparently, but a lot of these corporations are like, yeah, man, our stock is getting going crazy. By stock, I don't mean like money stock. I mean like basically corporations look at us as slaves, and it's in their interest for us to be healthy, especially mentally healthy. Because it's cost them a lot in insurance. Whatever. But my point is, yes, I'm cynical. I can be. Yes, I sounded cynical. But my point is, we had a presentation about mental health. And the gentleman who was speaking brought up the number 988. And all of us, we were looking at each other. When did that happen? But then again, why would we know about it? It doesn't matter, right? I can picture a scenario if someone, you know, is like thinking, has suicidal thoughts, and you're in that room. I think that's a scenario where I could picture. You know, okay, hey, let me actually just get to my point. I said, who's it for? It's for whoever feels the need to use it. But the point I was going to make was, during that presentation, it was fascinating. I found myself being locked. But my coworkers, they didn't really, I don't think they were brushing it off, but they were acting like, this is not really a presentation we need to take part of. Like, this shit won't apply to us. And the whole time, I'm like wishing I could get them to understand that, yo, man, acting like if it can't happen. Yeah, like it can't. Their response, these are all male coworkers. We were four in a room. These were all male coworkers. And two of them were just playing like, I'm not interested in this shit, while deeply dying inside and absorbing what this person was talking about. But it's interesting how it reminded me of why I can't take the men's rights movement, or men's rights activists, what it's called, seriously. Especially when they say shit like, y'all, suicide hits men more than us. Like, mental health is a crisis. Like, they bring up all the good points. But sometimes I think the men's rights movie is all about, hey, we want you ladies to care about this shit, not us. And it's a reason why I can't take them seriously is because I was looking at these men dismissing this shit, especially while they were they were aware of the fact that I had my journey with mental health. I had my journey with mental health, but it was like no one in that room felt like, I'm never going to need this number. I'm not going to need this mental health bullshit. It was like all being dismissed. And these are all grown men who've gone through life, who've had their battle scars, who go through their, like, luckily I don't work with people who, like, you know, instead of therapy, go to deal with their mental health issues by drinking liquor. I've met men like that. They fucking, you take them to the bar and they're not leaving. They're like killing pitchers upon pitchers. And once they get nice and drunk, that's when they start revealing, like, everything that's wrong with them. That's when all of a sudden you find out what's fucking with them, what's going on in their mind, or they get into a fight. And what I'm saying is, I guess what I'm saying is, it's not that I'm not disappointed. No, it's not that I was disappointed. It was more, I remember when I was like them. I remember when I was in a situation. I remember when a coworker went into stress leave. And we, it's not that we ridiculed the person, but we did like, it's not that we ridiculed it, but we were like, oh man, it was the equivalent of watching a man cry, hearing that a man cry, right? Or get emotional. It was that equivalent. And it's a game, it's a fucked up game we play amongst men. It's like, it's called pretending that emotions have no strength or is not significant. Hurt feelings don't matter. We play that game. And then when it happens, when you do snap, when you do get emotional, when you do cry, it's like a big fucking shock. It's like, what the fuck? If you're lucky, if that man's lucky, he'll be surrounded by other men who will show him empathy. He will sympathize. If not, that poor bastard is on his own. It's like, what the fuck's your problem? It's the equivalent of wetting your pants. They're going to treat you like you wet your pants. What the fuck is wrong with you? If there's one thing I hate about, I was going to say, not being a man, but about masculinity, is this how we dismiss the significance of shit like mental health and emotions, trauma. The average male was raised to believe that, yo, fuck it. Go for a divorce, lose your kids in the custody battle. You're forced to move back home basically you go through some adult type trauma and you just walk it off. There's this article that I had read a long time, and it talks about how, now I misunderstood. I thought it was saying that men deal with the, it was about how men deal with divorce. No, I initially thought it was saying divorce hits men worse than it hits women. And really what the article was saying is, because men don't do shit like take the time to, the same thing you would, okay, because men don't, okay, you know when you're boxing and every round you go to your corner to talk to your coach, like, what the fuck, you know, it's like, okay, yo, you're doing good, blah, 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 to reassess, to do shit like reassess. Because men don't do shit like reassess when it comes to their emotions, they just walk it off. Yeah, they just brush it off. Because they don't do shit like that, divorce fucks with them even worse than it does with women. Because women will take that moment to have their moment of vulnerability. Wow, I just realized that I'm preaching. And fuck it, whatever. I was trying to keep this shit short, but here we are, whatever. It's my goddamn podcast. All right, okay. What was that? Yeah. So going back to that meeting, and looking at these guys like, okay, this is what was going on. I was listening to the presentation, and these guys were talking. And I couldn't find the courage to say, yo, shut the fuck up, I'm listening. The thing is, they would have listened, but it was more the timid side of me. It was like the fit in, the yo, go with the flow one, didn't feel like, You know what? I didn't feel like saying shut the fuck up, I'm listening, because I was worried that, oh, well, he must be going through some things if he's listening to this shit. I could have been a leader, but I chose not to. But it did bother me. No, instead, I took the time to, like, reflect on how I wish I could communicate to these guys, man. Yo, mental health issues, it's like black ice. Yeah, if you're not Canadian, you don't know what black ice. If you haven't experienced like storm, okay, black ice is the kind of racist word, right? Black ice is like how do you define black ice? It's ice that you don't see it coming. You can't see it on the road, but once it gets you, it like catches you off guard. Like I remember, a funny joke is I remember I was driving and my cousin was like, and he noticed the weather, you know, because he's a smart guy, and he goes, "Yo, you need to be careful for black ice." My first thought was, what kind of racist shit is that? And then I got caught in the black ice. And next thing you know, I'm doing a 180 degree on a turnpike. Is that what you call it? On the arm. My point is it catches you slipping. You don't see it coming. Mental health issues, it's like that. Maybe it's not that rampant. It's, yeah, you know what it reminds me of? It's like when COVID would hit people. No, okay, COVID's about. What I'm saying is how everyone acts like, yo, mental health shit. Everyone's acting like it can happen that one day they'll end up being depressed. One day they'll be the ones fucking looking for that 988 number or relying on that 988 number. It was just, or you know what? These are men. Maybe they do have concerns like that, but they were just doing like I did and brushed it off. Playing around like, yeah, I don't need to hear this mental health bullshit. Will these slides be available after the presentation? All right, thank you. All right, okay, keep fucking around. I think is if you forget everything that I said, the one thing I want you to remember is if you're a man, is yo, man, it's just for real, man. Shit's for real. I mean, mental health is, I remember, it's a very fragile thing, and we're going through some tough times. There's a lot of like hardship in this world, and don't be surprised. I'm not saying go through life being feeling down, but I am saying, yo, man, it can happen. I guess in a way, I'm kind of grateful in this country that they took it upon themselves to make this number. Now, I should bring up the situation. I should bring up, right, because as I'm being hard on my colleagues, I should bring up the fact that it's kind of, there is a bullshit aspect of work talking about, yeah, we take mental health seriously. Yeah, we really want to be careful. By the way, get your punk ass into work twice a week. And if you don't make it twice a week, then we're going to increase it to three times a week. And if you can't make it three times, we're going to make it five times a week. Yeah, show up to work even though there's no one to collaborate with. Even though the people you want to collaborate with are in a different building. Show your ass to work. Pay them. You know, it's like, I guess that's a question I could have asked. If I didn't give a fuck about that job, I would have said like, yo, don't you think it's kind of hypocritical that you're talking this 988 shit and you want us to? Granted, some people come into work probably for mental health reason. Maybe they got problems at home and showing up to work allows them to escape. I'm not in that demographic. But anyway, okay, 988. If you didn't know, now you know. All right. Okay, next item on the list is, I labeled it as, I'm going to fix the title, but it's called Something Fantastic Freddy Said About Rap Shit. Rap Shit, for those who don't know, it's a TV show on HBO. On HBO, produced by Issa Rae. Shout out to Issa Rae. Queen Issa Rae. And I didn't know this, but apparently it got canceled. And this is Fantastic Freddy sharing her take on the cancellation, the announcement that HBO Rap Shit just got canceled. So here we go. How do you do this again? Here we go. Refresh and unmute.
Being canceled since Firefly. I'm sorry, but y'all gonna have to hear this rant. Shit was
one more time. Here we go.
Oh. Sad about a show being canceled since Firefly. I'm sorry, but y'all gonna have to hear this rant. Shit was the closest thing that I could feel to my Barbie movie. The way that it highlighted the many forms of Black femininity is unmatched, because it didn't only showcase what we would consider the Black excellence, which is closer to what Insecure did, but also the young entrepreneurs, the women trying to get up and get a moment. Highlighted queerness with Black women dealing with being stigmatized. Also, how it feels to be a Black woman in a space that loves your aesthetic, that loves your sound, but not you. Gave love to Black men, showcasing different types of Black men, even some with misogynoir, but also the good ones. Brought light to depression in Black men and how they're exploited. How easy it is for Black men to be caught up in the moment. Something shakes and we get this back, but right now I have to say this is a tragedy. I'm so sad. Any of the Snyder Bros or the people who complained about Sonic has any advice, please let me know. Not been this.
So I'm okay. Which, the way she ends her video, she like she emphasized the fact that she's bummed out by this news, and shout out to her. And to the first thing I'm gonna say is I feel like I should take part of the blame because I only watched the first season of Rap Shit, and yeah, I haven't watched the second season yet. I won't lie. You know, there was parts that I enjoyed in Rap Shit, but it's like it was another one of those shows that went over my head. This is not a fault for towards Issa Rae, but more for I should have trusted her the same way I trusted, like, Succession. Succession is a show that it took me a while before I finally got into it. I had to rewatch that first episode several times. I don't know how many times, but I remember it was several. The first few times I kept falling asleep, not because it was boring, but more because I was watching it when my mind wasn't ready to watch a show of that kind of caliber. Rap Shit, on the other end, I feel like these new shows, especially like Euphoria, they sometimes. The character will go for a scenario that is, it's difficult for me to watch. It could be cringe. It could be a cringe scenario. It could be a situation like someone trusting did something, some foul shit. And the point to that scene was meant to be a setup, and then in a later episode will be what's her name? What's her name? The comedian said this well, very well there. Annette. What was her name again? Not Nanette. The comedian who made Nanette. Anna Gadsby. All right. Anna Gadsby, in her Nanette series, she talks about how a lot of these shows, that's what they do. They create tension. It's normal. They create tension. And the point is, and by the time you get to the end, then they release that tension. It's like that good feeling. And what I'm getting at is a lot of these, a lot of modern shows, their way to create tension for me is like overwhelming. Maybe it's my anxiety and whatever. Look at me making an apology. Okay, I'm making a bunch of apologies, but I am. My point is, yes, I feel like I let Rap Shit down. Because it was entertaining. It was entertaining. It was just difficult for my old ass to process through it. Also, it went over my head. Now, hearing Fantastic Frank talk about it, it's like, oh, shit. Okay, well, then, fuck. Here's the thing about us black shows. Is we have to support our own art. And usually, I'm like that soldier who supports their art. But I don't know. I guess when it came to... when it came to Rapture, I didn't do the same. Insecure hit me on the first shot. It got me the first shot. I think for Insecure, it was just, wow, black people doing normal shit. But Rap Shit, it was, I felt like, was more for a younger generation. But whatever. I think I'm going to make up for it by buying the DVDs or something. But I'm going to, sorry, Saray, but I'm going to have to make up for it. But anyways, shout out to Fantastic Freddy for that take on Rap Shit. And she's right. This is a... this is a disappointment. It's a shame. But the real shame myself is, fuck, I felt like I didn't do my part. It's like being the guy who didn't. It's like being the person who didn't vote. It's one thing to vote and your person fails, but you could say, at least I voted. But it's another thing to not vote and the person the person you wanted to win doesn't win. And yeah, you feel like, I feel a little guilty. But oh well, it is what it is. Yeah. Who knows? One thing I can tell you about Rap Shit, it was ahead of its time, and I will not be surprised. You could bet on it right now. You heard it here first. Another show will copy this for what they did. What they did in Rap Shit will be copied in another episode. Who's hoping it's not going to be on a white person? Here's hoping it's not going to be by a white person. Okay, what else do I got in the ducats? All right, okay, I'm not going to play this clip, but I'll leave it for your own entertainment. And there's two reasons why I'm sharing this. But oh wait, the caption goes, Alex Jones, the Israeli brutality and their inhumane treatment of the Palestinians have been happening since 1948. So someone dug up on Reddit, shared a clip from Alex Jones on September 12, 2001. Now, when I first heard this clip, and it's Alex Jones just saying some pro-Palestine shit, my first thought was, wow, look at how this man changed. And it had me thinking about the possibility that future me might be the complete opposite of current me. Like the idea that, was it 2001? So we're 23 years from now. Okay, assuming I make it 23 years from now, I'm on a podcast saying some bullshit, saying some shit that today I would find horrendous. It's like, what the fuck? Yeah, man, fuck these immigrants in our country. You know, the white man had it right. Whatever, I don't know. It's more, I was just, watching this clip had me think about the possibility of changing. And, but it just kind of scared me. It kind of scared me because, but on the other end, but then it had me realize, just because someone is saying some pro-Palestinian shit doesn't mean they're pro-Palestinian. A lot of them, and I won't be surprised if Alex Jones falls in that category, it's just they're using that opportunity to justify being anti-Semitic. So that's why I'm not playing this clip. Initially, I was going to play this clip and be like, oh, wow, look how this man changed. But now I'm like, maybe he's never changed. Two things. Either A, he's doing it for the money. He just figured out that, yeah, I can make more money talking shit than I can. I can make more money sounding crazy than I can sounding not crazy. And two, I don't know if this is growth. If there is growth on Alex Jones' part, I think he only grew like, what do you call that, capitalism-wise. He just figured out what sells. It's kind of like being the rapper who starts out saying conscious shit, and then later going, you know what, I can make more music doing that gangster shit. I feel that's what I just looked at. But yeah, anyways, I'm going to skip this one. But the link is in the show notes for your own convenience. You know what? Hold on a second. Let me just see if there's any insight in the comment section. He doesn't talk about Israel at all anymore. Oh, really? He's more interested in theories about dead kids' parents. Yeah, that's right. So that's the top comment. Yeah. Yeah. But no props to Alex Jones for something he said back in 2001. Okay. Next item on the list. Okay, this one is kind of scary. All right, so the only reason I'm sharing this is because, I forgot to click on the, hold on a second. I forgot to bring up the article, bring it up now. And so apparently there's a clip, maybe I should look that up, of a plane breaking report. Atlas Air Boeing 747-8 from Miami International Airport catches fire, developing. Okay, let me see if there's more news about this. That's not the important part. That's not what I want to talk about. What I want to talk about is, oh, wait a minute. Is there a, 2 days. Okay, Yahoo Finance. Don't make me pay for the article. Usually I load these articles before starting. Okay, it goes. I think I'm going to assume that it landed because I would have heard about it. Yeah, January 19, Atlas Air Boeing 747-8 cargo plane made an emergency landing in Miami late. Okay, so they did land. Thursday, shortly after departure, after suffering an engine fire. All right, okay. Now, this is where I'm going with this. Shout out to Rod from The Black Guy Who Tips, who made a caption and who shared this video on Twitter, and any comment about, yo, the comment section is racist. And I remember being in disbelief going, how can it be racist? And then I read the comments. I'm like, how can a plane on fire, how the fuck do you make that into racism? And then I'm like, oh, I get it. Okay. So first there's like a joke about, yeah, the people who built the planes are a clown. And then next thing you know, motherfuckers are like a whole bunch of jokes about, okay, this is what happens when you have diversity and inclusion. Diversity, equity and inclusion, DEI. Oh, Comics. Oh, show more replies. Okay, I thought it got deleted. And it just had me thinking about, here's the thing. I can't control what's on the internet. So I made peace with the fact that there's going to be fucked up shit said out there. But every racist comment, I can't stand but wonder which one of my motherfucking which one of my motherfucking coworkers shares that thought? Because you know they do. You know the thing is, yeah, you know DEI is new for them, diversity and inclusion. For them, it's like, yeah, let's help a whole bunch of unqualified people of color get jobs and not think about skills and shit like, and things like that. There's an episode of The Gilded Age, and like seeing this feedback reminded me of an episode of Gilded Age, season 2. No spoiler, I promise. They made reference to the lady who, hold on, let me write her name. The woman who engineered the Brooklyn Bridge. Right. Her name is Emily Warren Roblin? Roblin, yes. Emily Roblin, born on 1943, Cold Springs, Trenton, and American socialite, builder, businesswoman who was largely responsible for guiding construction of the Brooklyn Bridge throughout the debilitating illness of the chief engineer. Okay, yeah. So pretty much, she jumped in on the engineering and shit like that. So in Gilded Age, which is a period piece based out of 1918, whatever, you know what, look up the Gilded Age era, during that era, and how, unlike today, they didn't do shit like celebrate the fact that, like, they concealed the fact that she was involved in the design of the bridge. And what's funny is in the show is how they keep mentioning, it's like, yeah, no, fuck that. If word got out that a woman was involved in engineering the bridge, people wouldn't go on the bridge. They would expect disaster. And it just brings me to the fact that, yo, to the point that's what equality is. Having the right to fuck up like white people can. like white men can. Like, look at Trump. Look at Trump, the king of all fuck-ups. He's Teflon Don. Look at Trump. He runs his campaign like, I don't give a fuck qualification. If I have to, if wearing a thong will get me elected, that's what, like, breaking all the rules. I'm not showing up to the debate. Look at Trump doing everything that Obama couldn't have gotten away with. Anyways, my only point to this is true equality is the right to fuck up like everyone else. Now, I'm in a situation where I'm acting team lead. I'm an acting team lead, doing some team lead shit. But I won't lie, man. The fear of fucking up is driving me nuts. It's like messing with me. If I ever get bad rating for my performance, it's going to be that constant fear of fucking up. Sure, on one end, it's allowing me, you know, to perform better and not fuck up. But it also stops me from taking risks. I ain't got it like these white dudes. These white dudes can fuck up. They'll be like, okay, brush my shoulders off. Okay, well, let's try again. Me, I fuck up, and it's going to be a C. Fuck, that's what happens when you fucking force diversity and inclusion down our throats. By the way, I have this joke I'm working on. And it's about how I like watching shows with diversity. Like, the cast is diverse, especially like sci-fi shows. Well, perfect example, like, let's say Star Trek, Next Generation, and the captain is either not a white male, and I like watching it from the perspective of a bitter white guy who's like feels like diversity and inclusion is like ruining the country. So every time something bad goes happen, which always does, oh, the fucking Klingon attack. I'm like, see, white man would have known better than to travel in that part of space if fucking lady or the black guy in charge fucked up. You know what I mean? And then boom, every time they get a missile, psh, we're under attack. See? White man would have dodged that missile. Oh my God, shields up. See, white man would have had the shields up before you. What the fuck? This is what happens when you have diversity and inclusion. And then when at the end, when the hero, the woman captain, or the black captain or person of color captain, rides through the air, you know, like makes it, survives the attack, I go quiet. I don't say shit. I don't bring up that word. I don't bring up their victories. I only bring up their faults. Why? Because, I don't know, white supremacy. I was raised in white supremacy, and my inner Uncle Ruckus likes to shine every once in a while. Oh, use a plane crash? Yeah. Yeah. Anyways. Oh, so shout out to Dr. John Paul, who was I forget this post. He was talking about DEI and how, basically, it was something about how he thinks white people are bullshitting when it comes to DEI. All I know is whatever he said triggered me to say, like, yeah, if you're part of those people who benefit from racism, then yeah, I can see how diversity, equity, and inclusion would feel like some bullshit. Like, you're not going to admit it. You're not going to say out loud. It's like, come on, man, I need this racism shit. I need to be Top Gun. I can't be sharing this shit with, and yeah. I wish I could explain to white people how, yo, this diversity and inclusion, don't get it twisted. The people on top have us fighting for crumbs. It just so happens that you have the larger piece of those crumbs. And when they throw this diversity and inclusion thing, they're just having us, blacks, fight against each other, people of color fighting against each other for the last bit of crumbs that you didn't get. We're not your enemy. That's my only point. We're not your enemy. The system is, but that's another long story. All right. Okay. Last but not least, on the rundown sheet is so Cat Williams has triggered the conversation about black men in Hollywood wearing dress. How there's a big conspiracy to get black men to emasculate black men by getting them to wear dresses. And in a tweet, I guess on the, it's called the Jasmine Brand. Is that the name of the podcast? I guess the name of the, or it's a news station. Okay, you know what? I'm not sure who these people are. But anyway, they have an interview with Marlon Wayans. Marlon Wayans? Yeah, Marlon Wayans. Am I pronouncing that right? Fucking the English language is fucking with me. Marlon Wayans comments on black men in dresses conversation and says it's just entertainment. I'm just going to start out before I hit play. Start up and say I agree with this brother. So here we go.
You're the black man putting on a dress. Conversation.
You talking to a black man and put on a dress?
Mm-hmm.
That conversation to me is, it's silly.
It's silly.
Because it's a negative thing that is only in black people. We have, for some reason, been programmed to look down on the craziest parts about our experience, that we're supposed to not embrace our past, not embrace our history, not embrace our heroes, not embrace our different levels of comedy, that we have to be this way. When Robin Williams puts on a dress,
preach,
and is Mrs. Doubtfire, he gets nominated for an Oscar, and white people think it's brilliant. His community embraces him. When Dustin Hoffman puts on a dress in Tootsie, and he wins an Oscar, he's labeled brilliant. When black people put on dresses, all of a sudden we're labeled by our own people like something negative. And I'm like, we did White Chicks. That's a classic movie. Mm-hmm. It's a classic. I don't care what nobody says. No, it's a classic.
Everyone says it's a classic.
That whole thing about, you know, you put on a dress and you selling out, that is not an artist's mindset. When you're an artist, you know, you go out and you create art.
I agree with you, brother. I agree. You know, I was just thinking as he was speaking, I would not be surprised if there's a past episode where I was talking, where Marlon Wayans. Again, I'm doubting my ability to read the English language. There might be an episode where I was mad at something he might have said, and I probably talked shit, and he was considered. I'm done with him. So it's funny, man. I think the lesson learned is don't fall in love with celebrities. Because one day they'll make you smile, and another day they will break your heart. Looking at you, Jonathan Major. Anyway, but that's not the point. In this particular situation, yes, I fully agree with Marlon. Not just Marlon, but I trust the creatives. I heard this story about how when the brother who played Omar in The Wire. I don't remember real names. Michael Williams. apparently this running joke about how when people saw the role of Omar, everyone wanted to play the role until they saw the part that, oh, boy, he's gay? No, that's not going to work. What I love about Michael K. Williams is he played that role to the end. Okay, so this character's gay? All right, cool. And he said, hey, don't gay people fuck? Apparently it was his idea to have like more or a sex scene with Omar. I guess to make it more authentic. I remember hearing Negroes, in my circle of friends, in my circle of people I know, of associates, people say, fuck, I ain't watching that show because of that gay shit. Or that Omar character, I ain't down with it because of that gay shit. Man, fuck you, man. You know, this is me putting a sand in putting a, drawing a line in the sand. I'm on this side, you're on that side. We don't have to be friends. Getting back to, my only point is I trust my black creators on that one. If you want to play a role that involves wearing a dress, so be it. I've lived long enough to know that not wearing a dress is not proof that you're masculine. that you fall under that you are a proud or you are committed to this cult of masculinity. See, that's another point I wanted to make is it reminded me of how we've made masculinity a religion. I call it a cult, but I'm going to go with religion just for the sake of conversation. How we've made it masculinity a religion, and in there is, yo, thou shalt not wear a dress. Thou shalt not do anything that's considered feminine, including having fucking feelings or having a mental health breakdown and calling 988. I've reached a point in my life where I'm burning a bridge between me and the cult of masculinity. I want no part in that movement. I'm no longer trying to be someone else's definition of a quote unquote real man. I make my own rules. I play by my own rules. Well, I'm trying to. It's still a challenge. But I'm saying, yeah, man, I guess it's not something I would debate someone with because at that point I doubt your ability. If you freak out over a man wearing a dress, I question your ability to think rational, to process why that shit bothers you. I do know, okay, now just for the sake of, just for the sake of conversation, I do know that slavery, we have a history of being emasculated by the white man. And it gotten so bad that, women had to step up because we were being traded. I heard this story, during slavery, an account of slavery is how first thing the white man would do with a group of slavery to establish dominance is find the strongest black man the strongest man within the slave. And if they didn't kill him or torture him, they beat him. Basically, to let the women know that, yo, we're your safety now. We're the captain now. You can't go to these people for safety. We're your gods now. And it was so bad that it got to a point that some mothers, black mothers, would make sure to beat out any form of aggression in their male child. So beat out anything that's any aggression that a slave owner, an enslaver, would consider a threat. So some mothers would raise their child to, yo, don't be a threat. Keep your fucking head down. Don't be a tough guy. So I understand that now a lot of men are like, we want to reclaim our masculinity. But the thing is, the definition of masculinity that we're going by is the white man's definition of masculinity. And he doesn't have it. And he's fucked up about that shit too. And his definition of masculinity is fucking toxic as fuck. Look, I'm just saying, man, play your roles, man. Do what you got to do. If you think this shit will not sell, but if you're an actor, you're an artist, you're creative. And if you need to express yourself with a dress, go fucking do it. I don't give. It's a piece of fucking fabric, man. You know, I'm raising my voice, a part of me is arguing with my old self, who would be like, nah, man, fuck that. Fuck that. White man's trying to get us into a dress. The old me. But old me was like, I say old me, it was very young, dumb, and full of cum. Didn't know shit. But I'm trying to picture having that argument with that version of me who was like, yeah, black man needs to stand up. Don't be wearing no dress. Who would take an issue with it? But back then I was like a fanatic about the cult of masculinity. I was like deep inside. You couldn't tell me shit. I wasn't a man's man either. It's funny. It's interesting, right? I didn't have the physique, the qualities of the conventional masculine, ultra masculine man, and yet I was a devoted member of the cult.
You're the black man putting on a dress conversation.
Anyways, yeah. All this to say, yeah, bottom line is, if you're a black male artist, creative, do your thing. Don't let these suckers who don't understand your lane stop you from doing what you feel you need to do. With that said, okay, so that's the last thing on the agenda, but I'm going to freestyle right now, right, for using random thought. One last item. This is just a random thought, and I just realized that on my last episode, I talked about the fact that I use a lot of French. I use some French in my shows, and I'm still trying to decide whether I'm speaking to an audience that's either bilingual or that's just English, i.e. Americans. And I had a realization. I'm going to label this under, file this under Know Thyself. And it's realizing that the kind of audience a show like mine is more likely to attract. What I'm saying is, if I continue to express myself using French words, then I should stop, or I should not expect black Americans, people like black Americans, or people who just don't speak French to be like, to fuck with it. And like RIP the Bodega Boys, but on their podcast, Kid Mero, he'd every once in a while, yeah, he in his AKAs, he would speak in Spanish. But it's interesting how that shit was just accepted. I don't know if anyone was stupid enough to write in and say, hey, cut off the Spanish because I don't understand what you're saying. No, it was just part of the culture. Hip hop was like that. And I guess I'm trying to do the same thing that, okay, what I'm saying is, I don't think I should expect a significant portion of black Americans to be okay with the fact that I say words that they don't understand. And I should focus my effort on, sorry, I'm laughing. I need to focus my effort more on black Canadians, especially, no, fucking not just black Canadians, bilingual black Canadians. Because, yeah, man, some of the folks from the English, I don't know what it is about the English language, but they got us all convinced that it's a superior language. And if you're not speaking it, then you ain't shit. Then you're a problem. Like, maybe, yeah, I should focus more of my attention on Europeans. Because in Europe, Europeans in certain countries in Africa, in African countries, basically places where it's normal to speak more than one language. As opposed to people who, yeah, I know, English. Only language I need to speak or hear is English. What I'm saying is, this is me going back to the marketing department, my marketing department, and saying, yeah, okay, you know what? Screw the budget. Screw advertising to Americans. If they're down, they're down. You know, I'm grateful for your attention, but don't expect it. It also goes into, it reminds me of when I was doing comedy. And I would write my jokes, and I kept picturing a black audience. I kept picturing myself on a stage, a deaf comedy jam. And I'm like, yo, this shit's gonna rock these niggas. And then when I actually go on stage and do jokes in the city of Ottawa, it's a majority white audience. I'm like, oh, fuck. I'm gonna have to explain who Beyonce is, which I've had to do once. I got to be careful of my usage of slang. I got to be careful of, yeah, I got to give like some of my jokes, I got to give a shitload of context. It's just, I got to balance the fact that I want to present to a black audience. But the reality is, I won't be presenting to a black audience. If I do, it's fucking, it's going to be like, it's a privilege. It's a luxury. It's I'm at the Nubian show, or I'm at, somewhere in Montreal, hopefully one day. I'm crossing my fingers. Yeah, I'm trying to holler at Renzo Dashington. He runs a room in Montreal called Bad Boy du Rire. He told me it's a bilingual show. Yeah, I need to get on that shit. But anyways, that's another show. Yeah, that's who my audience. I think maybe I should hang out in Montreal more often. I think that's where all this is going to. It's all going. But anyways. So this concludes News and Random Thoughts. Let's jump to final thoughts, and I'm gonna see some corny shit and let you get part of your day back. So that was some corny office lingo, which I promised myself not to say. But all right, okay, let's go. Saying shit like get part of your day back is up there with someone has a case of the Mundos. And if you don't know, if you're not familiar with that quote, then I recommend you watch Office Space. Yeah, and if you've watched Office Space and didn't like it, yeah, maybe we shouldn't be friends. Maybe we shouldn't be friends. All right, okay. All right, final thoughts. What's up with today's title? What's up with the title of today's episode? Just say it, B. All right, okay, needless to say, it's from the track Scarface by Scarface featuring Tupac called Smile. First of all, by the way, shout out to Tupac. How did he know that there was going to be some stuff? There was going to be some stuff that I was going to see that was going to make it hard for me to smile in the future. How did he know that? Huh? How did Tupac see the future and know that shit would apply to me? Yeah, I'm kidding. Right, okay, so Smile. And the theme of today's thought is more on the idea of being a broken human being. Just a real quick thought. I initially considered going with something from the song by Jay-Z, where by Jay-Z called You Must Love Me. There's a verse where he talks about how he shot his brother. I'm like, yeah, you gotta be a fucked up human being to shoot your own brother. But upon re-listening to the song, it hit me and I'm like, maybe Jay-Z wasn't the only problem. It wasn't the only problem. Maybe Jay-Z shooting his brother was more a symptom of a problematic, toxic relationship he had with his brother. Maybe shit between him and his older brother escalated to a point where, yeah, I would have shot him too. But anyway, the song ends with him saying how his brother said, yeah, his brother's in the recovery room after being shot by his little brother. And he still welcomed him, and they were, yeah, he still asked to see him the next day. So, sorry. It was just a reflection I had while listening to You Must Love Me, especially the part where Jay-Z says, my big brother's trying to make me tougher. How they used to fight a lot. And ended with him putting a bullet in his brother. Anyway, that's not funny. All right, okay. Getting back to the theme. Yeah, the theme about Brain Broken. Now, apparently, in my mind, in my thinking, I learned this in therapy, the word is scheme. Now, I'm not going to use the technical term. I'm paraphrasing here, right? I like to equate my brain, my thinking, my personality, all that shit to some line of code. Right, there's a subroutine, and in there, engraved in my operating system, in my brain, my brain's operating system, there's a part in there that says, that has this belief that something is wrong with you. At the very core of my being, there's this belief that something is wrong with me. And that belief has evolved or escalated to belief that you're broken. Now, I've brought this up several times with my therapist, and she keeps giving me this weird look like, nah, you're not broken. You're fucked up. No, I'm kidding. It's like, I think I understand what those looks mean. Well, it's not just those looks, because pretty much she's been repeating herself constantly, and it reminded me, at your core, you have this belief that something is wrong with you. Now, I don't think I can rewrite that piece of code. So my probably best bet would be to figure out how to be broken and beautiful. Shout out to, what's her name again? Shout out to, hold on a second. I just stole someone's title. Carrie, is it Carrie? Broken, hold on, let me make sure. Nope, not that one. Nope, not that one. Nope, that not. I'm going for a list. I'm trying to remember where I got the title, Broken and Beautiful. Oh, Kelly Clarkson. But be black. Kelly Clarkson is a white woman. Yeah, I know. All right, okay. Work with me here. Yeah, no, she's got a song called Broken and Beautiful. And the point is, okay, let me, I don't know if this whole idea of something is wrong with me is nurture or is nurture or nature. But one thing I do know is I think it's common in my family, including my parents, because they didn't have any solutions to it. And the only coping mechanism, or the only way they go about dealing with that part, that voice that keeps telling them that something is broken, it's either just fucking deny it, fake it till you make it, just pretend like that voice is not there. Or when you think about the fact, I grew up in a Christian household, and the notion that you were fucked up, how the story of Adam and Eve was supposed to show, is meant to symbolize, or part of the story was meant to symbolize how we're a piece of shit. We're a piece of shit that God tolerates, that we're lucky God shows us love. Like it's a notion, it's an idea that's both exploited, I'm going to use the word exploited by Christianity, but also is meant to provide a sense of empowerment, meaning this great almighty being that created the heavens and earth and all the good shit that we're from, despite my flaws, still loves me. And that used to be how I coped with the idea that something was wrong with me. I was saved by grace. Something a wretched like me. I'm trying to sing Amazing Grace. So now that I'm an ex-Christian, I've had to find other ways to deal with it. Now, on the previous episode, I remember talking about how I was expressing something about myself, and I mentioned that, and it's like I made apologies for it, about a flaw or a trait about myself that I treated like a flaw, and I added the words that, well, you know, because I'm broken. And I'm realizing, it's not the fact that I was broke, that I mentioned that I was broken, it was more the fact that I was apologetic about it. It was my way to get you, the listener, to accept what I was telling you, to stop you from dismissing it, if I can get you to, okay, all right, okay, oh, so you're telling me about a bad flaw about yourself? Okay, it was my way for you to, for me to get you to accept what I was saying. When the truth is, I'm realizing it's just a trait. Any trait you have could be, whether you're ambitious, whether you're cocky, prideful, whether we all have traits, and they could all work to your detriment, and they all can work to your benefit. That, you know, I mean, I can't help you with yours, but I do know what I'm realizing that I do know. I have, despite the fact that I have this trait of this belief that something is wrong with me, it could either work to my advantage or I could allow it to drown me. Like, if I could accept the fact that, okay, it's not that there's something wrong, it's more there's something different about me. At the beginning of the episode, I talked about how, in the introduction, I talked about how I say something along the lines of, I represent a hold it down for black folks who stand out. And it is something that I've always felt throughout my entire life. It's funny, yeah, so you have the church aspect, then you have the fact that I grew up as a token black guy in a white society. I thought that's what was wrong with me, the fact that I was a black kid surrounded by white people. I thought I was cursed. Then when I started hanging out with black people, and that voice, something is wrong with you, was still there. And it got worse when I'm surrounded, if I'm with black people who are like to fuck with you or are able to see your weakness and they like to like mess with you. All this to say, I didn't do well with being roasted because I'm dealing with the fact that there's a voice in my head saying something's wrong with me and I'm trying to hide that shit. Yeah, maybe I guess that's why, look, I'm explaining. I think I'm realizing that the one thing I do have going for me, I will say, pat myself on the back as I continue to walk with this belief that something is wrong or something about me is different about me. The one thing I've got going for me is my self-awareness. Now, I haven't mastered that shit to the fullest, but I'm self-aware enough to talk about this trait in a way that someone else might be able to relate to it and be like, oh, that's what's been holding me up, or can connect, or we can share notes. I used to be a programmer, and I was really good. At least I tapped myself on the show. I was really good at troubleshooting. I was really good at troubleshooting. And part of what made me good at troubleshooting was how, compared to some of my, I guess during my academic years, compared to some of my classmates, is how my ability to focus on when I'm looking at code, my ability to focus on what it doing as opposed to what I wish it was doing. It's very hard. So you got a line of code and it's not behaving the way you want. It's not returning the results you want it to return. I was able to focus. Okay, then what is it doing? Like, I put in 2, I put in another 2, and it's supposed to give me 4. This motherfucker's giving me 300. So now I'm able to analyze, okay, what's causing this thing to give me this number? And if I could go back, it allows me to, oh, okay, this is the part that's broken. By doing that, it has allowed me to look at some of my traits, whether it's a behavior that I have that I don't like, I'm able to think about why I do that kind of shit. And I'll call it my superpower. My ability to analyze my own code. Now, again, I don't have that shit fully practiced. There will be times where you'll try to point something out and I'll be like, I'm not ready to see that shit. Hence why I enjoy my therapy sessions. Because it's pretty much getting help with looking at the mirror or self-analyzing or looking at my own source code. Anyways, let me try to wrap this up. So in preparation for this episode, I was trying to find a song that was close to the theme. And first, because I usually default to rap music. And the closest I could find or I could remember to a song that touches on the theme of being broken was Tupac's verse, "Born with less, but you're still precious." So, what's her name again? Kelly Clarkson. She says, "Broken and beautiful." Tupac says, "Born with less, but you're still precious." Granted, when Tupac says "born with less," he means a lot more fucked up. But I mean, yeah, he's talking about a different category of people who are like born into this world feeling like, yeah, I don't think I belong. So yeah, so while trying to find. While not being satisfied with Born Less, but you're still precious by Tupac, I Googled songs about being broken. And I ended up with this list, which, by the way, is in the show notes. And it's 53 songs about people who feel broken. Now, I gotta mention that some of these songs involve like broken because of relationship, but that's not what I was looking for. But I will say that I created a playlist. If you want me to share with you, let me know. But I created a playlist of these 53 songs, and the one winner, the real winner, the one song that I was able to find that relates to the idea that I'm trying to share is "Broken" by an artist named Anson Seabra. Let's see what they wrote. Yeah. And he goes, songs I wrote in my bedroom 2020. Oh, wow. That's badass. Right? Okay. So he goes, the title of this song is pretty literal. He's trying to say that he's broken. Yep. Messed up. He desperately needs help. It reminds me a lot of what depression does to a person. He's lost himself and he wants to find his own self again. Yeah. You know what? Okay. If it wasn't for hip hop, a verse from this song could have easily been the title of this episode. And you know what? I'm going to read the verse of the song because, yo, it's very powerful, man. And he goes, first verse, he goes, "If you see the boy I used to be, could you tell him that I'd like to find him? And if you see the shell that's left of me, could you spare him a little kindness?" Man, it's shit like that. It makes me wish I was an artist. I wish I was a singer and I came up with lyrics like that. And in the chorus is what got my attention. It goes, "'Cause I've been high and I've been low. I spent 1,000 nights alone trying to hold on tight. Feelings come, but they won't go. Please, won't someone take me home before I lose my mind?" Oh, sorry, that was the pre-chorus. The chorus actually goes, "Am I broken? Am I flawed? Do I deserve a shred of worth? Or am I just another fake, fucked up, lost cause?" Are you hearing me? I'm going to repeat that. It says, "Do I deserve a shred of worth?" Man, do I deserve a shred of worth? Or am I just another fake, fucked up, lost cause? Am I human or am I something else? 'Cause I'm so scared and there's no one there. And this is my favorite part. He goes, "To save me from this nightmare that I call myself." Are you kidding? I'm not going to read the second verse. Oh shit. Okay. Fuck it. I'm gonna read the second verse. 'Cause there's only two verses to it. Right. And then, second verse goes, "I've tried everything and anything, but nothing seems to work quite like it should. Between the madness and the apathy, seems there's nothing left inside of me that's good." God damn it! Holy fuck! Hold on a second. Holy fuck! Yo, this dude deserves a
bonfire.
Oh my god, man! I love deep lyrics. You know, in just a little one of the songs that made it on the 53 songs about people who are broken was "Killing Me Softly" by Roberto Black. "Killing Me Softly" by Hurt by Johnny Cash made the list. You know, the list will be in the show notes, so you can write it for yourself. But Killing Me Softly by... not Lauryn Hill, but the original one. Roberta Flack. Okay, I said Roberta Black, yeah. And I looked up the meaning. You know, I'm going to put that in the show notes, right? But because, again, I love deep lyrics, man. I love poetry and songs. You got to have a put in a song. I like a deep meaning. Anyways, I was looking at how the lyrics for Killing Me Softly came about. And it's pretty much, you know, because strumming my pain with his fingers, singing my life with his sword, killing me softly. My point is, the artist had a moment where they were listening to another artist. And or it reminds me of those moments in church where the preacher is preaching, saying a sermon. Now, he's talking to everyone. But you hear that message and you feel like he's talking to you directly. It's like, who the fuck told you? Are you following me? You got cameras, you know, going on me. So Killing Me Softly is a song about that moment where the person on stage says some universal shit, but to you it gets personal. And I'm told that's what real art is. When it like touches you like that. So in this particular song, My Killing Me Softly by Roberta Flack is Anson Seabra. And this song, like, I'm gonna look up more about this guy and to see what it's about. Oh man, I really hope he's not racist. Or has it said some racist shit? I've been hurt before, all right? Yeah, that's the thing. With anytime I discover a new white artist and I get all excited, I'm like, oh, let me see if they've said some racist shit. Yeah, Colin Kaepernick should not kneel. Oh, come on, man. All lives matter, you know, whatever, man. I have to protect myself. First, I dear white people, stop being racist. Anyway, yeah, man. That's the winner. That's the 53 songs, and the one that made it, the winner would be, like, if I had to make a soundtrack for this episode, it would be Broken by Anson Seabra. Okay, let me see if there's the last point I was trying to make. Nurture and nurture Christianity. Try to live life feeling broken and beautiful. All right, okay, now that's it. Okay, made all my points. Okay, gang, this concludes today's episode. But before I end this episode, I got to say, check out the other links. There's an article, I think I may have shared it in the other links of the past episode, and it's called Adults Shouting at Children Can Be Harmful to Children's Development and Sexual or Physical Abuse. As sexual or physical abuse study finds. I'm going to get to that in another episode. But it had me thinking when I read the quote earlier about by Frederick Douglass about Broken Men. I was trying to make a link between the two. You know what? Let me put some thoughts into it, and it might be a topic on the next episode. But for now, just enjoy the link. And, in the other links, there's a link about Trump. Trump getting cussed out by Melania. Trump trying to get in the limo. I guess it was after looks like there's trouble in paradise. Yes, I don't like Trump, and I root for his failure. And seeing him have marital problems, yeah, makes me happy. Right, Sugar Sammy joke? Yes, the reason I'm sharing the Sugar Sammy joke because how that dude managed to create an audience of bilingual people. Yo, man, yeah, I admire him, man. I admire his success and him as a comedian. But I love the fact that, yeah, man, because that's how we speak. He's from a world that we speak both languages, and he's made far. What I'm saying is, it gives me hope. It's an inspiration for myself. Okay, last but not least is, oh my God. Okay, in the other links, there's some jokes in there that I forgot to add. Okay, I'll fix it. I'll fix it later. Whatever. But anyway, my point is, go check out the other links and hope you enjoy. I hope you enjoy the other links, today's other links. All right, this concludes today's episode. Holler at me. You know, I'm going to keep it simple. If you want to holler at me, use the show's Twitter handle, which is @ShutUp Podcast. On TikTok, Shut Up Pox, but I beat out Black. But you can find Shut yeah on social media. Shut Up Podcast is on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads, and it's all at Shut Up Podcast. But if you really want to get a hold of me, this podcast, our stomping ground is shutuppodcast.com. What was that? I said shutuppodcast.com. One more time, because my headphones was unplugged while you were speaking. I said shutuppodcast.com. Oh, that's right. You guys use Bluetooth now. Well, you know, it's another conversation. Email address is shutuppodcast411 at gmail.com. You can subscribe to this podcast using the RSS feed that's on the website, or go to Google, Apple, Amazon. You know, pretty much anywhere where you can get a podcast except Spotify. I'm working on that. Actually, I'm lying. I'm not working on that. I'm just not on Spotify. So I think I'm everywhere except for Spotify. Thank you for listening. Thank you for listening, boys and girls. And please remember, be kind to your... Excuse me. And please remember, be kind to your favorite podcast. All right? All right. Peace.